Well, thank you guys so much for being on that episode of the pod, which I think is probably going to be called Hometown USA.
It has to be. Yeah,
or something with Hallmark.
Christmas Baby.
Christmas Wish.
It could be Christmas Wish.
A Christmas Wish.
Yeah.
Something of this kind. But now we're going to do a little talk back about musical improv and nerding out about that and what we got out of that episode. And I would love to start just with how each of you got involved with musical improv and like a brief history of what brought you to it now, today, starting with you, John, and then coming this way.
Okay. Well, with me, I mean, honestly, my mom loves musicals. So I've always had like musicals in my life, you know. Growing up, there was just the one TV in the house. So if I wanted to watch TV, I'm watching whatever my mom's watching. So she's watching a musical. I guess I'm watching a musical. So then, you know, I started to love them. And then later realized that, like, all the Disney movies I loved as a child, those were all musicals. I was like, oh, wait, I've just been just in musical world this whole time, you know? And I think it was watching Baby Wants Candy that was like, I want to do this too. So once I saw that show, I was like, I guess I'm taking some classes and I'm going to sing and make up musicals pretty much, you know? And I have had so much fun with it ever since.
Hell yeah.
For me, I mean, I feel like this is going to be a lot of people's story, but my mom would prompt me and my brother as like a kid to make musicals to like entertain my dad and her, like make up songs. But she would try to trick us into like make up songs about loving broccoli. Cause she actually was like reversing us. She was Uno reversing us in terms of like, I'm going to trick them into enjoying healthy foods by making them sing about it. Mm-hmm. And like, honestly, it happened. I like broccoli because of it. But from there, I just loved singing. I loved performing. And then I did musical theater for a number of years, which I absolutely adored. And then when I moved out to LA, I was like, oh, well, I love improv and I still love musicals. Why can't I have both?
Right.
And so it just kind of felt natural to like blend those.
I have a little childhood story as well.
Wow.
All started in childhood.
I know. But I would sing myself to sleep when I was a kid. And up.
No one was singing you to sleep?
Well, my mom, when I was very young, she would sing me a song. But I think even as I became a teenager, I would like, if I had I couldn't sleep and I was like nervous about the next day, I would like actively sing
myself a lot too.
Yeah, in a narration kind of way.
You gave yourself lullabies.
And so I've always loved to sing, but when I was younger, I had a horrible singing voice and people would tell me to stop. So I think I just really wanted to sing even more so because of that. But I was exposed to Rumpelteazer in New York, the incredible musical improv team in New York. But I never really thought about it. I'd done improv for a couple classes, and then just years went by, and then I was at a friend's birthday, and at the end of the birthday, she worked at a comedy club, and we went there after hours, so it was like 1 a.m, and we all, one of her friends played the piano, and they were doing this like musical improv shtick, and so we all just like took to the stage, and we're performing, just the 5-6 of us, for her birthday, just singing musical improv, and I went, oh, this is actually the most fun I've ever had in my entire life, and I want to move to LA, and go do that forever, and that's
that
what
was
happened.
Part of the reason you moved.
Yeah.
Oh wow.
Mm. Yeah, I literally came here to do musical improv.
Okay.
And you're doing it.
And you for other reasons.
Look at you.
Yeah. And no other reasons.
Yeah. I came here for musical improv.
I came for the weather, and it's raining today.
So. Yeah.
Well, that's really cool. I mean, fascinating that you all. I think John, you started the trend, but that you all sort of had like a childhood connect with musical improv, and beautiful. I love that. So now you're here. You're no longer children. You're doing musical improv a lot. I think all of you are doing Sing Out Louise.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we're on the same team, Small Town Mayor.
Yes. Okay, got it. So you're all playing together a lot. Tell me about that team and tell me about like what you're learning from being on a team for a while and like what you're learning from this group. I mean, it's sort of like a training ground for musical improvisers in that you get a lot of coaching and you do a decent amount of shows. So tell me what's like coming up, like what you've been thinking about and processing on that run.
Well, I'll just say Small Town Mayor is probably one of the most positive playing environments I've ever been in. Truly, it's like wild how positive everyone is and how much we support each other. I don't know if there's like the Small Town Mayor of it all, of like this kind of like sort of cheesy name that inspires a kind of almost Hallmark feel.
Which is so strange that we, again, had
we
a musical that was...
about...
unrelated.
Oh, yeah. You guys always do small shows set in small towns?
Accidentally. We could do a city.
we usually start with, like, a town hall.
Yeah. I see. So the fact that it had some of that flavor was a little bit...
Yeah. Yeah. We have a niche and we go hard into it.
We know what we like or what we do often.
Yes. That's very true. But yeah, no, I mean, it is a very positive environment. I mean, pretty much every show we do is just like you can tell everyone is just willing to jump in and have so much fun with each other. Like we just play well together, which I really like about the team. So.
Yeah.
I think it's the value in playing with the same group of people over and over and over again, especially when you're like a part of a show like Louise, is now we're starting to have conversations more like, okay, what is, we're working on all our individual comedic and like comedic voices and performer sensibilities, what we like, but also as a team and as a show, what do we like want to do together?
Right.
And like starting to have a couple of more of those conversations to the point where like in a recent practice, we did 3 mono scenes back to back. And from each one, it was just like we had no plan to do it, but we would do one. I guess for the listener, a mono scene is a musical improv set all in one location, no cut tos, and to another place. And we would like go, oh, can we do it again?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, can we do it again? Mm-hmm. And like keep growing together in how we play. I don't know. It was so gratifying.
I think that there is a privilege, and you have so many creative partners that you've worked with for a number of years that you learn how to kind of set someone up for like their thing, their shtick. No, it's true. Yeah. Like you learn what they like and you learn what they're good at. Even like in terms of musical, it's like, I know how good you are at like rapping or coming off things with the top of your head super quickly, that it's like, how can I set you up to do that? And I feel like with this team, because it is so positive, we are learning about each other. We're in that privileged position where we can continue to work together and learn together as a team. And then also now we're at a stage, because we've just passed the, 7-month mark of being together, where we can
happy
like...
Happy seven.
Happy seven.
It's wood.
That's right. That's the gift. Where is my gift? But it's at a point now where we know the strengths, and then it's kind of like, okay, now that I'm in a scene with you, how can I set you up to do the thing that I know you're going to sparkle at? Mm-hmm. Which I feel like comes from working with an ensemble. That's like such a gift to work with a team that you admire.
What do you feel like have been like, you know, imagine you're speaking to players maybe who are, you know, one step earlier in their improv, musical improv journey. Like, what do you feel like you've been working on or struggling with or like had breakthroughs with, either with Louise or in general?
Hmm. I guess initial struggles might have been, you know, the trust factor. Because, you know, for some of us, we had never played with other people in the group before. So you're just like, okay, can I trust that we're going to get through this scene together, you know? And I mean, it always works out fine. But, you know, there's still that apprehension in the beginning because you're just like, okay, this is our first time together out here. What's going to happen, you know? And then it turns out great because, you know, we're trying to have fun together. And, like, everybody really just wants the other person to make sure they're having a good time too. So then everyone's having a good time. So, I mean, some of the craziness that comes from Brittany is just amazing sometimes. I mean, she did a face-off scene.
Some of the craziness. when Brittany gets on the stage. I mean,
it was great, you know? And I was like, wow, I wish I was pulling somebody's face off, but I wasn't in that scene, you know? And that's okay, you know?
And that's okay. Next scene, next
scene. Brittany, would you like to speak to that?
I guess I want to speak to that in a different way. Honestly, it was the best moment of my life. But I think that... Oh, I just had something on the top of my thing. Oh, yes. Any creative, like, moment of pause or any creative, like, hurdle or resistance or something like that, whether it's, like, musical, improv, art, drawing, writing, whatever it is, I'm like, I always have to convince myself that as soon as it gets hard, as soon as, like, something feels like a hurdle or something, it feels like it's, like, just too far, that's when you're, like, right on the edge of a breakthrough. Mm. As soon as you're just getting so much resistance from yourself or like whatever it is, that it's like that's the moment where you actually can't quit on yourself. So whether it is like musical improv, I'm an awful rhymer just because of the way my brain works. And it's something that like I struggled with for a while, and then I just like surrendered to, okay, this might not be like my sparkly improv musical quality. And I have like other stuff that I can bring to it where I'm just like
crazy, crazy time.
Just crazy face. Just face off, face
faces
off.
Yeah, you eventually figured out it's always pulling off people's faces. Yeah.
And that's, and it works every time.
If not rhyme, face it, off.
Yeah, yeah, face off. Face off rhymes. But for me, it's just like surrender to the things that you obviously feel like you can't change. There will always be progress in that. Just understand that that'll be slow. But for the other stuff, like, keep pushing forward, because I think there's always good, you're always going to grow whether you like it or not. You just are. At least that's how I feel. Like, if you're, I wouldn't even say like a step behind in the realm of this community of like where you are in your process, I feel like you're only like in a race with yourself. So keep like trying to encourage yourself to move forward.
Something I was thinking about was like another value in working with the same group over a period of time is also working with similar coaches over a period of time, where like if you're setting up an experiment, you want to have as many controlled variables as you can, so the thing you're changing is as limited to that thing as possible. Like if you're like, oh, we're going to work on like some simple scene work, right, this time we're only working on this one variable just to see how we build that habit. And I think for me it's been like, oh, I am learning more about the nuance of commitment with a specific group, because I'm like, it keeps on coming up in little ways where I'm like, oh, I have this impulse to do this thing, but because this coach has seen my work a bunch and with this group of people, they're like, I noticed a trend here where like, I think a previous note has you in your head and you're afraid to go to this place again, but actually that is what's going to serve this game more than anything. There was a recent scene. I have a little bit of a reputation for having kind of an ingenue.
It's a reputation.
He's just an ingenue. I go to a dramatic place. I go to a ballad.
And he's a damsel. And
yeah. Most often the damsel. I like a window. But in the past year, I've been like really trying hard to play different characters. And then without being able to plan for it, I was in a practice where I was stopped partway through. And it was like, hey, you kind of made a joke directed move where like I think even what you're saying would be valid if you had just responded emotionally underneath it in a way that is appropriate, because the game that's being set up is kind of like, it's kind of big, it's kind of emotional, and so it was just a gentle thing of going, you can bring that back now, like don't let go of your instincts from before. And it was like, it was such a visceral note to get, and I don't think it's possible for me to forget it, but I don't know if I would have encountered that note if it weren't for 7 months of practice with the same group.
Right. Yeah, I see what you're saying. You do, practice is the place where you just think, I'm just going to work this muscle. Because improv is so, there's so many variables that it's like you can only think about one thing at a time. It's why like anytime people like before a show set show goals and they're like, I'm going to do this, this, and this. I'm like, dude, like, you'll be lucky if you remember like your own name up there. Like, nothing wrong with show goals. I think show goals are good, but it's like meditative. Like, you want to place one goal in the water of your mind. It's like, I'm going to listen a little bit more.
Yes.
Yeah. Like, that's all you can handle.
Truly.
With all of the other input, I feel like.
There's so much stimuli on stage that, like, I don't know, a live audience just like immediately is electrifying, that it's so hard to go, okay, now think about all of the things that you're doing in practice. It's like truly just, i.e., remember your name. Maybe remember your character's name if someone
you know your boy didn't forget his name. Yeah. Or sorry, did forget his name. I forgot my name. You called me Johnny and I went, thank God.
In that set, we originally had a name for Flannel that wasn't Flannel.
Yes. Yeah. I know, I kept trying to remember that.
Yeah. I was like, what is my new name?
He goes by Flannel.
Yeah. Because it's like you can remember certain things easier.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Speaking of, let's talk about the set. It's rare for players to get to 2020 their own improv. And now, with the benefit of immediate hindsight, what are things you like felt really good about? And what are maybe something that you're like, oh, I didn't see the forest for the trees, or I got stuck on this thing. I mean, I'll go first. I love the tropiness of this show. It's so freeing to do a tropey show because you know you have almost unlimited a well that is very deep to pull from. And something I struggled with is I've never seen a full Hallmark movie.
Oh.
So I was almost like doing other I was doing like pulling from the well of cultural critique of that thing.
Uh-huh.
Where it's like, oh, I know there's this kind of thing in Hallmark movies because I've seen the TikTok about it, mm-hmm. you know? And that's like something where I'm like, I need to watch a Hallmark movie.
You know if you watch one, you've watched them all.
Yeah, they're pretty much all the same. I've only seen maybe two or three, but it's kind of the same formula each and every time. And I think we hit a lot of the strong mm-hmm. points on that one. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
In this moment, I'm realizing I'm the same as you, Philip. I've only seen parody or critique, and I, for some reason, thought I'd seen full Hallmark movies, and I'm going back and I'm going, no. I think I just saw...
Can we watch one of yours?
I was going to say... It,
can you drop one?
Can I what?
Can you drop a name?
Can I drop a name? A Recipe for Joy. That or there's the Naughty Nine that's on Disney Plus. But that one's more of like a Christmas heist, which is actually kind of cool. It's like Ocean's 11 meets Ferris Bueller's Day Off for children.
That does not sound like Hallmark.
It's like very much like a Christmas movie, but it's really fun.
Right. Okay.
And then the other ones I've done... They're more like Lifetime in terms of like someone's died. So yeah. I'm like, maybe that one's not the Christmas movie that you want to. But no. I do want to say like they are super formulaic. So there's like tropes, but they're meant to make anyone who's watching it be busy while they're watching. So essentially like you don't actually have to watch the whole thing to know where it's going to go.
Yeah.
It's kind of like when you're watching your binge-worthy television show mm-hmm. and you're just watching it for soothing qualities. Yeah. It's like you watch a Hallmark movie and you're like, everything's going to be okay. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I almost wonder if like, if you dropped like Meryl Streep into that, mm-hmm. like if it would actually be kind of upsetting because it's like, we don't need you to live the full lived reality of your dad having cancer, for example. It's like
it's actually too much.
That'd be too much. We actually need it to be painted with like the glossy softness of a response that is more like a children's play about cancer or something.
Yes.
You know what I mean?
That's actually something, not to go into like casting and like totally into that world, but there's a lot of like really great dramatic actors who don't usually book Hallmark because it stands out if they're too good in the genre.
Right.
Because they want it to be softer. They want it to be digestible. They want it to be like easy and glossy, as you mentioned. And if they're too dramatic, it actually throws off the whole tone.
Right. Like if there's true full mucus, tears.
Yes.
It's like, oh, no, we don't do that. Like we do a single tear.
Yes.
Yeah.
Because that's Hallmark.
Yeah.
But yeah, to go back to your original question of critiquing our own work that we just did.
Celebrating your own work and leaving room for one question.
Yeah, you're in the critique zone.
Yeah, you're in the critique zone. Self-critique. We love it.
Yeah, it's so good. It's so interesting, actually. I don't usually get like propped up as like the protagonist. So like that was an interesting swing for me because I love playing like supportive roles or like supporting roles in even our sets. Mm-hmm. So when we endowed, and I knew who I was when the endowment happened, I was like, oh, Brittany, take the wheel. Like that was quite a tiny bit of pressure because I'm like, oh, I'm not the ingenue. I'm usually not Adam's role.
And what a breath of fresh air was that for all of us.
No, but it was just interesting because I do feel like my archetype is usually I like being like best friend. I like being supportive character. I do like enjoy playing lead roles, but it was just, it's not where I lean usually.
Yeah.
So like when I'm going to watch this back, I'm going to just be hyper critical of like, oh, was that the right move for her?
Or yeah, it's funny to be the pro tag of a narrative show. Cause you're kind of in the driver's seat to a certain extent, just because at any given moment, you're probably the next response. Like it's just a simple question of lines per show. Like if you're the protagonist, you have you're driving with your wants, but you're also kind of like driving locations and you're driving like, which is why, you know, almost always, you know, in coaching narrative, I usually think people put too much pressure on the protagonist. Like, hey, get out there, like make moves, endow, like you need to endow harder because they are out there carrying the whole, you know, the whole thing.
Yeah. Very much similar to like a normal television series, how a lot of the leads, it's like they're kind of the same character and all of the supporting characters are the ones like endowing just because like you are carrying the whole show.
Yes.
Interesting.
And you have a responsibility to be like voice of reason by default.
Kind
Sometimes,
of.
Like I feel like you did play a lot of voice of reason in the show.
Mm.
Like, oh, that isn't a good proposal. Oh, that isn't normal that... what did it come up? Those poems aren't
Good.
Yeah. Good.
Yeah.
I love the real reaction. It's so, you put a boat? What?
Yeah.
Even if I love you and I'm so, there's a kind of like danger in this gesture, because it's like, this is so much to the point where I'm like, if I'm really being faithful to the scene, there's no way I could possibly accept your proposal. Right,
I know. And it was a 24-carat diamond ring.
Yeah. Yeah.
And again, Sally probably wanted to accept it, but she hadn't seen this man, Flannel, for 5 years.
Exactly.
That I'm like, there is this reality of like, he's living in a different reality where like the grand gestures are one thing. You think of like your character is like, no, she'll get past me cheating on her 12 times.
Well, in my mind later on, I was like, he thinks he's him.
Like, yes, of course.
I think he thinks he's like, oh, we're meant to be, and this is my trial.
Yeah.
And that's the excuse he's given himself.
Yeah.
Should we go back and do that song?
I think I can get it this time.
Yes.
Yeah. I thought that was a really fun game. I liked that you played it all the way through. Like, it's fun. Sometimes I think our impulse can be like, oh, you know, because we expect that the person, you know, we had queued up, we had framed, like, women love sudden, spontaneous. Like, so it was kind of understood that this was not going to work. That's, like, the fun of it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But if you, I think early on in my improv career, at least, I always had the instincts of, like, well, people know I'm going to not like it, so then I should like it because, like, comedy is surprise.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
You know what I mean? But it's, mm-hmm. like, no, actually, it's just, like, it's more like the execution of the idea is the fun. It's, like, We know what's going to happen. Like, they're not going to like it unless something in the improv brings it up such that genuinely you like it.
Yes.
Like, that's why the poem bit was so funny. It's like, genuinely, I think there was a possibility that he would just win. Like, the poem would be good enough.
Yeah.
It's like playing D&D or something. Yeah. It's like you're rolling the dice of what could happen.
Yeah. John rolled in that one.
I honestly thought that John was going to be like, yeah, I'm going to speak from the heart. Like, this is going to win her over because like it's not a grand gesture. This is like a sweet gesture, which would normally win someone over in a Hallmark movie.
Yeah. But it's, you know me, I'm never the,
no, I know,
I'm never the
funny
love interest. So that's why I went my route.
I love that you were the love interest.
Right?
Yeah. Yeah. Cause that never happens with me. I'm like, I'm usually the taxi driver. You know?
Yeah. Well, we
or the snowman.
Or the snowman, I guess. I
feel like one of the fun things about, and so scary things about improv is sometimes the joke becomes your own flaws.
Yes.
Like, I know I've done so many scenes where it's like, I'll genuinely try to like deliver on like that heartfelt thing, and someone will be like, that wasn't heartfelt. And I'm like, oh, right. Like, I have work to do as a man. Like, you know what I mean?
It just cuts right to the
door. Yeah. It's like, oh, right. Like, that isn't a good poem I can come up with off the jump. I'm not saying that about you, John. I'm just saying,
no, it's
like,
fine.
That's like some of the most fun, but you have to have a healthy ego, or
you
know,
you have to let it roll.
Yeah. You gotta let it roll. It's tough. Yeah, so many times when like, yeah, you take a big like, or like you're supposed to play the sexy guy or something, and it's like that wasn't sexy. You're like, oh shit, I was really trying.
Yeah.
It truly is like what you feel comfortable playing with. And we all have like our go-to characters too. But when you do get endowed a character that you feel vulnerable in, man, is it hard to be like, just double down and not think about it. Like not like have like your own ego involved. Just like, no, let's just jump in.
Speaking of, was it your intention for that call to be boss or ex?
Oh, it was definitely intended to be the ex. So we had the exact same impulse at the same time.
Incredible.
Which, you know, then I was just like, quickly pivot. There's definitely a move I've seen in lots of shows where it's like, we're both the boss. And I was like, no, I don't.
I was kind of leaving it to you.
Yeah, I was like, no, just patch you through.
On the piano.
But it's, that happens all the time. It's the best feeling, actually, because like, oh, that's a great move.
Yeah.
You know, because multiple people are thinking of it. Mm.
Well, my favorite move was being the lady in the background. That you were like you were like,
oh,
you were patched in, but you were like still cheating.
That was
yes.
I'm so glad you jumped in and started heightening, bringing all the other people in. Because I was about to just sing another little couplet, and you're like, no, and I'm here too.
Yes, yeah.
And I was like, thank you. That's good.
That's something nice about podcast improv is like, I mean, not that you can't do it on stage, but it's like the you know, theater of the mind is such that you can add unlimited. You can really blow out the game really quickly right at the end.
Yeah.
It's like, and we're, you know,
and we're here too.
There's 100 other women and we're flying to the sky. Like, you know, the rules of physics don't apply.
We're flying to the sky.
Wicked 2 coming out.
We're almost out of time. I know we lose you in a second, Brittany. Mm-hmm. But as you move forward in musical improv, what's something that's like you're staying jazzed about or that you're curious about these days?
Me personally, us as a team.
Personally?
Okay. Okay. All right. I mean, I guess I want to make sure our shows are like blowout affairs. Like, you know, like where it's like, you know, we're like lately when I think we did like a Tina Turner thing and like we were all in like, you know, in sync together, you know.
Insert photo here.
Right. But like,
we'll send it to you.
We'll send it to you.
Yeah, but I'll definitely be inserting that.
I really like the idea of like 8 minds working together as a hive. And, you know, like sometimes, you know, you'll miss something, but then you're like, oh, wait, let me jump on that quickly. But like just, you know, the idea of just constantly just, you know, kind of being like, you know what, this is probably what we're doing. And then you look over and you're like, yeah, that is what we're doing. You know, and then just be
buzz,
ready
buzz.
To go. Yeah.
Buzz, being
it up.
Yeah, and I'll go. And I feel like I have been, the longer I've done musical improv, the less I have a stake in exactly how the show goes. I'm much more like playing with abandon of like, oh, I might have ideas or things that I like to do, but I'm finding the part of like the ego that like is like working on something and wants to try it is really leaving and making space for, I really just want to do what the show wants. Like whatever the game is, like if the song is me not singing at all and doing a physical bit that supports, I'm actually very content to do that. And I think that probably does come from being so privileged to get to do so many shows with Louise and otherwise.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But yeah, I think abandon overall, just like kind of also like playing stuff that is maybe even more out of my wheelhouse to the point where you're like, oh, I don't actually know easily how to play this game. And there's a kind of like our lovely friend of the community, Greg Smith, talked to me once about kind of like jumping out of the plane and then like figuring out your parachute as you fall. There's like that quality that's actually very fun to watch in someone performing live, where you're like, oh, we're watching you find it. So as you discover it, we're discovering it too. And it's even maybe 100 times more fun than if you clearly had a plan and just did it.
Yeah, I think that's my favorite part of improv.
Yeah, it's well, improv,
like,
yeah.
Well, just in general, but like, yeah, it's just like, yo, hey, we're flying, and hopefully we hit the ground safely.
Yeah, what I'm describing is I'm learning to like improv. I'm learning to like it. Bring us home.
It sounds like you're talking about commitment, right? Aren't you talking about, ooh. Christmas wish. I think, personally, for me, with this adventure of like musical improv and always feeling like the pillars keep like moving, every time you learn something, you realize how much you don't know. Truly for me, it's just like, now that I've got a lot of the foundation laid, I want to really be hypersensitive to like truly, as sad as it sounds and as basic as it sounds, the first like couple things that are said, like really finding whatever that is in there. Because our sets on Louise and Small Town Mare are very premise driven because we do have an opener. However, sometimes we are doing a tiny bit of an organic start with just like a familiar character you've seen in the opening because we don't have like as much of a premise to pull. And sometimes like there is so much life that you can find in like the first couple exchanges. And I think for me now that I'm like, okay, I'm not having a panic attack throughout this whole scene. Now I want to get to like, not as often. But for me,
and that's
now
growth.
I think
I can see Harper Rose rubbing off on you.
Yes,
in your
too
mannerisms.
Much. Yes. Too much. This is the Harper Rose.
Yeah.
We love you, Harper. Yeah, we really folded into each other now.
Yeah,
we truly have.
Yeah.
But I think that it is. Yeah, just continuing to like grow as an improviser. I know that it sounds so silly to like, we were talking about listening, how like in the beginning of a show before you do anything, you want to like set a goal. And honestly, it is just like listen more and try to not go into problem solving so quickly. And then, yeah, commit to what that is. I think like that's like a personal thing in terms of like the team. Just have fun. We've been having a good time that I'm like, I just want to continue to have fun.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I love that. I feel like I don't do very much premise driven improv at all. And it actually kind of spooks me. Like,
you wouldn't think of the musical version as a premise show, kind of?
No, isn't that funny? Huh. I guess actually the whole show is a premise because you're musicalizing, you know, Kit Kats or something.
Yeah.
But that's funny. I've never drawn that connect. I've always been like, no, it's basically an organic show with like a plot frame. But anyway, I find that really interesting. I feel like premise reminds me of Harold's, which I always struggled with.
And I hear you, but even not saying, but and yes. And I feel like the games that we play after the musical version of even like Hometown USA, those are premises.
Right. Like, this, you know, you already have so much there because like, oh, we know it's going to be a riff on the dad-daughter relationship in a Hallmark movie.
Yeah.
And that's like kind of enough premise to
find something. And like, again, it could be just, it's like a light thing. It's a light us establishing a baby roadmap. And obviously we can go wherever we want, but at least right away, it's like, oh, we kind of have this taken care of, which feels, again, not heavy premise-y, but you're like, oh, we have things checked off. And I feel like for like Harold-esque stuff, or premise generated stuff, it's like because it's mildly familiar, we've already taken care of that.
Right. There's so much base reality that's already dealt with as opposed to when you're doing a jam, it's like the first three lines you have to like be listening with the biggest openest ears
because
it's like you're not only getting crucial information about like who they are, where you are, but also like how they feel about you and how real everything is, how grounded it's like all this like hyper awareness.
What does this remind you of? Yeah. Oh, it's like that movie. Now we have those things we can pull from.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And you can't even like truly get a game off and running or like know what the scene is about until you know who each other is, where you guys are, what's even happening.
Why it matters.
Like, no, truly, like it, you kind of have to do all of that, especially for jams. And that's honestly, jams are incredibly difficult because of that reason.
Right. Yeah. As opposed to, so you guys do an opening and then you have all this, you have this well of at least like ideas or like, it's
or
why
characters.
Openings are nice. Yeah. Just like, oh good. We did, it like takes the pressure off the generative part of improv, the purely generative part. Cause it's like, oh, we have like a well, we built a little well and we put something in it. Yeah.
To just check off like a couple things before we start the song.
Yes. Of like, no, good. We're doing Hallmark, for example. That's a well. Well, this was really fun. Anything before you go that you want to share or add?
John.
Say the thing you always say. Say the thing you always say to inspire people, Adam.
What?
Say the thing that you always say to inspire people.
Say the thing you always say to inspire
Adam,
people.
Say the things that you always say to inspire people.
Say that thing you always say.
I...
All right, thank you guys so much for listening.
That was beautiful.
Such a blast.
Wait, no, I've got it.
Bye.
Bye.
Wait, give me a shot.
No, we had enough.